This is Who Kicked the Corner Flag, an English soccer game show podcast. And here's your host, James Rose.
Welcome along to another edition of our Quizzical Roundup. Yes, this is the show where Premier League highlights, quizzes and banter go hand in hand. To help us along the way, we're back with the leader of the KC Spurs fan group and the man whose adrenaline has only just reset thanks to Patrick Mahomes and the KC Chiefs. It's Jerry Bustamante. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well. My doctor cleared me to participate in the podcast. It was touch and go there, but I think we're ready to go.
I think we're ready to roll. I like it. We're also assisted today by the KC Gooners chairman and the man whose snowman building skills are on point. Crazy creative. It's Boyce Richardson. How are you, bud?
You know, the Unai Emery era may have been terrible, but after this weekend, the one thing that I'm thankful for is that Arsenal are not coached by Bill O'Brien.
I like that tie. No fake punts here. All right, then, let's go ahead and jump right into our first quiz, which is question of the match. As usual, we'll start with it, and each person is going to get a statistical question from the most significant fixtures from our Premier League weekend. Jerry will get 2 points from this category, and Boyce will get the extra rumour mill to follow. And it's 2 points for a correct guess this week, and here are those categories. Reds as record breakers. A red card Aubameyang. City run riot. No red here. So, Jared, we're going to start with you this time. Go ahead and pick a topic for us.
All right. As usual, I just want to preempt Boyce from picking it. We'll go with Reds setting records, whatever. Let's talk about Spurs.
Let's talk about Spurs. Nothing to do with Liverpool. Liverpool secure another victory, breaking the record for the most points acquired after 21 games. Pretty impressive. Against Spurs, the final score here is 1-0. Okay, Jared, here's your quiz question. On Tottenham, how many goals have they conceded in the 13 games under Mourinho? Is it 14 or 20?
Oh, 14.
Would you believe it? It's 20.
I knew. I wanted to say more, and you double-crossed me, James. Because, of course, my getting an answer incorrect is your fault. Has nothing to do with me.
If in doubt, blame it on the Quizmaster. Believe it or not, too, this is the quickest of any of his sides that he's managed that have shipped 20 goals. As Chelsea boss, it took him 44 games to concede that many. And so Mourinho at Spurs is clearly working out a treat here. But let me ask this. A lot of people going into this game were thinking that Liverpool were going to completely destroy it. It was going to be 6-2, 4-1, 5-0, whatever. But do you think Spurs' performance was as bad as everyone thought it was going to be?
Oh, of course not. And if anybody answers yes to that question, they didn't watch it.
Right.
This match was Spurs came out punching. They had to. And that first 5 minutes, that press was fantastic. And then Liverpool just absolutely took over. I mean, I think possession ended up being 2-1 at this, which we all expected. I mean, Mourinho came out with a heavily defensive lineup. Jaffa Tanganga comes out, despite being turned around by a beautiful Firmino touch in the box for the goal, had a pretty solid match. Mm-hmm. And but for a Giovanni Lo Celso whiff on a beautiful Serge Aurier cross, I mean, we might be having a different conversation. But the fact of the matter is, Liverpool are just so good. Mm-hmm. And I was actually really surprised at how open this match ended up being. The last 20, 25 minutes of that match, it was a slugfest. It was open. It was pacey. It was entertaining. If you're a neutral, it had to be a fantastic watch, a fantastic game of football. As a non-neutral, it was remarkably frustrating. But I got to tell you, I didn't walk away from that match upset. Mm-hmm. I think, we were texting before, and I said, anything less than losing by three. So I lost by two, I considered a win. Nicking a goal, bonus points. So really, that might say something with the tempered expectations. I think that's mixed between the type of season Tottenham is having. But the other side of that coin is just the type of season Liverpool are having, right? They are that good. They are that dominant. As I said, beautiful touch from Firmino in the box for the goal, and they probably deserved more. But, took a lot of fight, took a lot of heart. I know Christian Eriksen is getting a lot of flack, you know, for his performance there. I think a lot of this is just simply colored by the notion that he's on his way out. He did have some bright spots in the match, but I do think it's probably time to part ways, and hopefully not for free. I mean, I said for this point, I mean, you take a cup of coffee for the guy at this point, right? So I think anybody that says this was a disappointing performance from Spurs simply didn't watch it, because I'm heartened by it. I'm excited. You got some young talent that came in and played, and you're really at this point, you know, we've talked about it. Liverpool have it sewn up. I don't buy into this notion of any Reds fan who's sitting here and giving me this aw shucks BS, but, oh, I don't want to say it too early. Get out of here with that. Come on. As you said it, this is an historical team. They're going to break 100 points. It's only a question by how many. And it's all buttoned up. So anybody else, you know, I think maybe top four, but you got to be realistic. Some things got to break our way. You're looking to next year. We've already had two signings in January. We weren't guaranteed that at all. We're already signing players, bringing them in, a little bit motivated by injury. But you know what? I'm heartened. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed the fight and the opportunities that they put forth.
I would agree with that, sir. Boys, do Liverpool lose a game this season?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I really think that you have to circle that City fixture away. I think we're going to talk about their match against Aston Villa a little bit later on. It's one of those situations where I think that that's really it. You know, they have Arsenal on the road, but I don't really think that that's going to be, while it would be great for the history books on the Arsenal side, I just don't foresee Arsenal somehow managing to top Liverpool, even at the Emirates. But I will say, to echo a few of Jared's points in this particular match, and I think it's something that you're going to see when we talk about Arsenal here in a little while as well, you know, it wasn't just Lo Celso that had an opportunity to be able to score for Tottenham in this match. It was also Heung-Min Son had an excellent opportunity that he spurned over the crossbar. Mm-hmm. And just for a little bit of foreshadowing into our discussion of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, if he's off, Andy Robertson should have been off in this match as well. And I was actually kind of surprised that Jared didn't reference it earlier. He went over the top of the ball and went full studs in against one of the Tottenham players, and they didn't even card him or bother to look at it on the monitor. And this is the absolute farcical nature of VAR. Is it's just complete unequal and ridiculous application. But to actually answer your question about Liverpool, I think with Minamino, they've got depth for the FA Cup run in the event that they want to make that. They have the ability to be able to make substitutions. And one of the things beyond the luck that Liverpool seem to have, where offsides isn't offsides unless it's against them, and where red cards don't get even turned into yellow cards, they just get overlooked. they've been very fortunate in the front three to not really have any injuries. Firmino, Mane, and Salah, I think between the three of them, have missed less than 10 matches throughout the course of the entire campaign. And when you have that level of fortune and you seem to have VAR on your side, as well as seemingly the vast majority of the officials, and at this point, you know, City's back in second, but they're 14 points behind, and Liverpool still have a match in hand, I just don't see anybody else giving them a match. I think the only question is, as it gets towards the end of the season, if they're still in the FA Cup, if they're still in the Champions League, and they're trying to rotate, and they already have the EPL title in hand, and I think that City match is at the beginning of April, you know, can they focus in the same way that I think if you read about the Invincible Arsenal squad, there was sort of a shifting focus towards the end of the year when things were kind of wrapped up, and a question of whether or not the players still had the motivation, even though they had the title. It's a question of whether or not Klopp can keep them sufficiently motivated in the league while the Champions League is still going on and they're still fighting on multiple fronts. Mm. But I think if I had to call it, I'd say they get a draw at City and they finish invincible as well. Whoa. As much as I would hate it.
There it is. I was waiting for him to say it. But again, as I always say, we'll see how it goes. All right, boys, let's go ahead and move on. We have two topics left. We have a red card, Aubameyang, and City run riot. No red here. So which one would you like to pick?
Oh, let's talk about Arsenal.
Let's do it. Palace once again upset Arsenal's victory hopes with a deflected equaliser and a red card for Aubameyang. The final score here was 1-1. And here's your quiz question. Arsenal have now failed to win how many Premier League games when leading at halftime? Is it 5 or 8?
5.
It is, yeah. Nice work on that, bud. That'll get you those first 2 points. Just 5 on that crazy stat. Were Arsenal simply unlucky not to take those 3 points here, taking the Aubameyang thing aside for a second?
I think on the balance of play, probably. Palace were suffering from a litany of injuries. They didn't really have significant squad depth. They were playing inexperienced players on the back line, especially in the wing positions. And I really think that the big deal for Arsenal in this match, above and beyond the Aubameyang situation, is just the fact that they had about 30 to 35 minutes where they were unquestionably on top, and they were just running rampant all over Palace. But the problem was that they didn't actually finish anything sort of beyond that Aubameyang goal. They didn't really turn any of that possession, any of that pressure, any of that stuff into an actual product at the end. And it's one of the things that sort of created an overarching problem for the squad throughout the entire year. I think if you'd looked at the squad at the beginning of the year and you'd said, all right, we're going to break this down between offense, defense, and the midfield, what do you think the best segment of Arsenal is going to be? Almost everybody would have said the offense. But in reality, beyond Aubameyang, the midfield hasn't scored really any goals. And Lacazette can't score away from home. And they're just not putting anything together in the final third, and that's causing them equally as many problems. You know, if they score a second goal here, if they score a second goal against Chelsea when they had the bulk and majority of the possession, I think it looks a lot more like the United match did when Arsenal managed to score 2 goals fairly quickly, and they were able, at least at this point, because I think if you look at this from a 40,000-foot perspective, Arsenal only conceded 6 shots with 3 on goal, which you have to remember that this team away to Watford gave up 31 shots, I believe, in a half. So I don't really know if you would have expected when Arteta came in that he was going to create better defensive balance, but I think what you've seen is that he is exerting a lot more offensive pressure. And he's not sitting back and soaking it up like Unai Emery did. And what that's doing is it's actually facilitating the defense because it's giving them more time and less pressure. And you've seen in the last few matches David Luiz enter into almost the offensive third and start picking passes out and pinging the ball across the pitch. And it's created a better offensive cohesion for Arsenal. But now, obviously, they've got to deal with a 3-match loss of Aubameyang. Unfortunately, one of those 3 matches is actually Bournemouth away in the FA Cup. So they only lose him for Sheffield at home. And then the big deal is, of course, Chelsea away. And we can, of course, talk about the red card if you'd like to.
Oh, that was my next follow-up question. Thoughts on that overall? Obviously, it came, 70th minute? Did it change Arsenal's structure? Obviously, it did change their structure, but did it change their mentality, I guess, going into the final minutes of the game?
Well, I'll sort of segment that question. First and foremost, I think it's a red card. I think it's unfortunate. I think Hodgson himself said at the end of the match that he didn't think that he intended to do it, that it was just a striker's tackle. And when you look at it in slow motion, which is what we're subjected to sort of all the time, and you take the pace of play out of it, it just looks really, really bad. Mm-hmm. But it just segues into what I was talking about a little bit earlier with Andy Robertson. It's frustrating to look at those two plays side by side and see what is more or less the exact same result. And one through VAR is taken from a yellow card to a red card, and the other one still remains nothing, and it goes unpunished. And you just have to have questions about the application of VAR in that situation. But I think that any Arsenal fan that tells you that it wasn't a deserved red card is just frustrated with what the outcome was. I think one of the nice things to see is that in the aftermath of the red card, again, we didn't revert to Emery ball. We actually were on the front foot, and you know, Palace machinated a chance off of, I believe it was a set piece that Socrates ended up clearing off of the line, but it was kind of fluky.
Right.
There wasn't really a situation in those 20 minutes where Palace did much of anything other than yet another Wilfried Zaha dive in the box in the waning minutes, which is just exhausting. But the team that fashioned the best chance was Arsenal. And credit where credit's due, Guaita came away with just an incredible save, but Lacazette fed that ball to Pepe, but for that touch, Arsenal might have still walked away with 3 points. I think as an Arsenal fan, you probably, in the harsh light of day, have a right to be a little bit frustrated that they didn't come away with all 3 points out of this match. But you also, to steal Jared's word from earlier, have to be a little heartened by the fact that Arsenal previously in the 1920 campaign, after a red card to its primary scorer, would have just folded up and fallen to pieces. And in this match, they really didn't. Mm. And they had a very, very good opportunity to win. They stayed on the front foot. And, you know, hopefully moving forward into the Sheffield match on Saturday, you take that and you hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. I'll take that. Jared, let's talk about Palace here a little bit. What do we expect now from them as they move into the second half of the season? They were kind of up in the sixth place, seventh place areas. Now they're starting to fall away a bit. Is it just going to be almost like a carbon copy of where they ended up last season?
I think it might be. I mean, you're really looking at some phenomenal production from Jordan Ayew, which, you know, we talk about teams that kind of draw from the same well over and over again. But once more, we're in another transfer window, and once more, we have the perpetual rumors of, is Wilfried Zaha going to stay or is he going to go?
Right.
So I think that's going to be part of it. You know, they have some experience back there with Gary Cahill. I think you're going to see this team just finish mid-table again.
And that's
fine. You know, they've had, you know, different guys step up and all that. Palace is still a fixture that I worry about. You know, they're always, you know, somebody who can mix it up, and they've proven that they can score goals. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a question of whether they're going to have that consistent production. And it really needs to come to whether or not, like we say, a few weeks ago, we were saying the same thing about Bournemouth, right? You know, like, is this just hanging around really what they want? The question is going to be, are they going to spend the money? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Hodgson's done a great job managing the squad. And if they can cash in on Zaha, which truly I think has been the issue. No one's willing to pay the price tag that's really demanded. I mean, Spurs have been linked since, oh my God, 2017 at this point. So it's one of those things where, like, I'm just tired of it. It's like Zaha and Grealish. Like, no, go away. It's not going to happen. But
there
to piggyback on, yeah. Oh, is that what it is?
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
But to Boyce's point on the red, you know, I'm not going to blur the point. You know, I agree with him on the Aubameyang card, but the Robertson, not even a foul, by the way. The play was continued, and Gazzaniga actually had to make a pretty nice, you know, save off a header at the end of that sequence. So I'm not exactly putting my tinfoil hat on when it comes to Liverpool. However, just yet another example of the phenomenal inconsistency of VAR. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the issue is, if it's that the whistle wasn't blown and that's why it wasn't looked at. But if a retroactive discipline comes out from the FA, if you're an Arsenal fan, you got to be losing your goddamn mind. Mm-hmm. Because if we're going to the point where we can look at these things that look to be 50-50 at the end of matches and keep players in matches, and that's applied against an informed striker like Aubameyang, but not against a Liverpool player, you have to be, you know, pushing to, you know, tear the gate down. So we'll see. Yeah. But I echo Boyce's points there, and I think they were both reds.
All right, let's move on to the last one, which is City. Manchester City put in a masterclass performance as they easily dispatched the footballing Peaky Blinders. The final score here is 6-1. And Jared, this is your quiz question. Sergio Aguero has now scored how many total Premier League hat-tricks? Is it 9 or 12?
Oh, God. It's got to be the higher one.
It is the higher one, yes.
Yeah.
It'll get you like, those points.
You could have said 9 or 47. I would have picked 47.
That would be impressive. It's now more than any other player in Premier League history, surpassing Mr. Alan Shearer, which is crazy. He's on some kind of run there. This is Aguero's 9th season with City, and he's obviously proving he's still got it. But does he see out his career at City? And if he leaves, does that unhinge the team at all?
It really depends on who's willing to come in and step up. I mean, there were some growing points with Gabriel Jesus there, but I think those are pretty well over. And, mm-hmm. and I think Pep Guardiola has pretty much shown that he has obviously an eye for talent. He's going to bring somebody in. I mean, Aguero's what, 30, 31?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure. Getting on a bit.
And I don't really know what the term of his contract is. I mean, if you're telling me that he's signed until he's 35, I don't know. You know, you kind of, you know, put out to stud in France, or maybe even the States. Who knows? Maybe David Beckham is looking for a flash player to bring in at Miami Flamingos Internazionale. But basically, you know, in this business, if you're producing, here you are. So, I mean, I think he's – Boyce, is he tied with Henry, or did he pass him?
I believe that he actually surpassed Henry in goals, but is still, I think, 28 assists behind.
Okay.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
So as far as point scoring, I mean, the guy's producing. Right now, I mean, I don't think he's going anywhere, but I think it's a little bit of a it was a bit of an indicator. No, you got Gabriel Jesus scores in this game as well. But they have a world of talent. And he's just a guy that you worry about. I don't care who you are. And, you know, I'm thankful for players like him. You know, we've talked about this, you know, those iconic moments and that goal, which I believe was against Villa to secure the title.
You mean back in 2013?
I thought it was QPR, wasn't it?
I think it was QPR, yep.
It QPR? Mm-hmm. You're right. It was QPR. I mean, I don't care who you root for. That's just a phenomenal Premier League moment. So, you know, we're thankful for these kind of players to come in and, you know, and add that excitement to the game. But, you know, I see him taking his talents to South Beach and, you know, maybe kind of cashing in. We'll see.
I like that. That's good. Boyce, Villa's woes continue with only 2 wins from their last 8 Premier League games. Are they leaving us at the end of the season?
You'd have to think so.
Yeah.
I think their only hope at this point is, I believe they're in the Carling Cup semifinals against Leicester and somehow managed to end in a 1-1 draw away, which is at King Power. So not a bad result there. Maybe they'll walk away with an opportunity to lose to Manchester City in a final, just like so many other great teams before them. But you just can't see them maintaining. And unfortunately, it's been nice to kind of see Jack Grealish in Aston Villa colors, given where he grew up in his history. But I think you're going to see him on another squad next year. He's
Spurs.
Got it. I hope not. He's probably going to win Champions League football, which means he's not headed to North London.
Well played, sir.
I was going to say, one way or another. You know, you look at a lot of the players on this Villa squad, and outside of Mings and Grealish, there's just not a lot of talent to be had. They've tried to sustain throughout the course of the year, but they just keep getting demolished.
Yeah,
you kind of got a feel for them. Unfortunately, you know, Jared's probably weeping tears as Bournemouth take 19th place in the league, but all three of the teams right now, with the way that Watford's playing and the fact that the one and only David Moyes, the individual genius and brilliance of the Moyes era at Manchester United, is back at West Ham United, I think that Watford and West Ham are going to be able to eke it out. Villa don't seem like they've got a chance. Bournemouth looks to be in significant trouble, and Norwich have 14 points, although those 14 points include draws with Arsenal and Tottenham. So, again, no, things are just going bonkers in North London this year. It's great. Gangbusters.
I love it. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our second part of this quiz. It is, of course, another round of Rumour Mill. The same rules as before. I'm going to provide a line or quote from a newspaper or online resource. All the guys have to do is tell me if it was actually printed or something just completely made up. 2 points for a correct guess, and Boyce is up first with this one. Arsenal striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has been linked with a move away from the Gunners, but says he is, quote, committed to the club.
True.
Yes, sir, it is true. Nice work on that. That'll get you those 2 points right there. Obviously, we talked a little bit about Aubameyang in the previous part, but we didn't really talk about his loyalties to Arsenal. Do you think they're in question at all at this point, or do you think he's going to stick it out for a little bit?
I certainly think they should be a little bit in question. I mean, you look at the trajectory of the club right now, it's on an upward swing because of the hire of Mikel Arteta, but he was made to suffer quite significantly under the auspices of Unai Emery. And, you know, Arsenal certainly aren't headed for the Champions League in the 2021 season. At this point, they're not even in a Europa League position. They're just now in the round of 32 in this year's Europa League, which gives them a potential opportunity to end up in the Champions League next year. But with teams like Inter Milan and Ajax in the pool as well, you have to worry about those chances. And the thing is, I think he's 31. He's nearing the twilight of his career. I think the only question is whether or not you're going to find a club that's going to be willing to put the financial outlay forward to get Aubameyang at this point. You look at the clubs throughout Europe. City has Gabriel Jesus, not to mention Sergio Aguero. You've got strikers all over the place in terms of Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. A lot of the teams that you could see him potentially wanting to go to that are more well-suited to his goals throughout the course of the season already have players in those positions and probably aren't going to be willing to push out 55, 60 million pounds to pay for a player who's 31 and has 1 year left on his present deal. But also, on the other hand, as an Arsenal fan, as much as I love the guy, I think the counterbalance is also true. He's 31. He's entering into the last year of his deal. He's going to want significant money, probably to the tune of 250,000 to 300,000 pounds a week. You know, it's a question of whether or not you see his form diminishing over the coming years and whether or not it's worth that outlay. And Arsenal have been burned fairly recently doing that with the whole Mesut Ozil situation. So I question whether or not they'd be willing to do it again, which basically leads me to the point of, if there was a team that came along and was willing to offer 60 million pounds for Aubameyang during the summer, I think Arsenal would probably be foolish not to take it.
Interesting. I like that. Interesting. All right, Jared, this next one is for you. Spurs are considering a loan approach for Atletico Madrid's French midfielder Thomas Lemar with £51 million option to buy.
Sure.
It is true. Yeah, nice work. The Independent
published. That was a guess. That was one I had not heard.
That is a great guess. And is it true? Obviously, we've talked a little bit about Spurs' transfer activity. If anything's going to actually materialize is yet to be seen. But could you see his name in the mix?
Sure. I mean, we're really looking at, if you were to look at this, 3 weeks ago, you would have thought center back, wing back.
Right.
That's really what we needed. But with Harry Kane going out, and I may lightning strike me as I say it, but in the integral necessary Moussa Sissoko going down, we need a box-to-box midfielder, which we're looking at in Jason Fernandez, who's hopefully going to sign here. We need a big replacement striker, which we got in Piatek coming over from AC Milan. Yes, we need to stack this midfield because, like you said, Christian Eriksen's got to be out for something.
Yeah.
Be it a cup of coffee, be it a bag of balls, I have no idea, a wave and a handshake. But, he's going to be gone. And, let the Giovanni Lo Celso era begin. However, this is a team that has lacked depth for years. So this has really been kind of a systemic issue with Spurs that goes back, frankly, before Poch. So if we're going to build that kind of depth and all of that, like I said, I'm excited to see some younger players come in, but we have to build that midfield up.
I like that. All right, boys, this last one is right here for you. West Ham plan to assign new manager David Moyes a significant sum of money for him to spend during the January transfer window.
You'd have to imagine that's the case because they are presently 1 point off the drop. So, sure, true.
It's false. I completely made it up. But I'm glad you believed it because they
wow,
do.
Wow, that was cruel.
All I can say is sorry.
I mean, they'd better.
They need to, though, right?
No, they should.
Maybe it's a message from me to them, but they need to do it. They need to do something because clearly David Moyes hasn't got the pieces that he potentially needs. But on West Ham, real quick, do you think they're going to survive the drop? Because they've been flirting with it a few times.
I do. They and Watford somehow always manage to survive the plague. It hits teams. They end up in like 16, 17 place, or I guess Watford have actually managed to make it a little bit further up the table. But West Ham are just a collection of misfit parts. It's kind of crazy that there's just no cohesion in that squad, and there really hasn't been for a really long time. And they are just running on the minimal level of talents exercised by the players that they've collected together, and they haven't really had, even under Pellegrini, they were just running out there and trying to play haphazard football, and it worked sometimes and it didn't work others. And yet there they are, 1 point off the drop with, the advantage over teams like Villa, Bournemouth and Norwich are that West Ham are presently at -8 on the goal differential side, and Villa's at -15, as is Bournemouth, and Norwich is at -23. So, you know, even for a team like West Ham, it's hard to ship that many goals.
Yeah. I just saw that their supporters were wearing Carlos Tevez masks at the last match, which I thought just absolutely fantastic.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to our last section. And in this edition, we're going to play a round, and Jared gave me this idea. Great idea, Jared. We're going to play a round of stadium profile. Stadium profile. So in this, I'm going to provide five different clues to a current Premier League stadium, each clue easier than the last. The first person to shout their name and correctly guess said stadium wins those points. But you only get one guess, as an incorrect shot, as usual, will freeze you out. So to make things fully professional, I'm only accepting the actual names of these stadiums, so not where Arsenal play or where Spurs play. It's got to be the actual name. So get Googling, get those lists out, just to make that clear. all right, let's see how this goes. Stadium number one has a capacity of roughly 52,000. The north and west stands are almost double the height compared to the other stands. Is located in the north of England.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
St. James Park, Newcastle.
It is, yeah. St. James's Park is absolutely correct. Nice work, and it'll get you those 2 points. Trust me, Boyce, he did not give me the answers and the questions and all this to it. It's all very fair. despite just the idea. Other clues on this one. Where were we at? Oh, here we go. Was once known as the Sports Direct Arena. Weird name. And, of course, it is home to the Magpies, Newcastle, St. James's Park. It does look kind of funny when you look at those pictures. You're like, why are those two stands
like a V? It's weird.
Yeah, yeah. Very strange. But, hey, if it works, it works, I guess. All right, stadium number two opened back in 1910. Is located on the south coast of England. Is also known as Dean Court.
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce.
Boyce. Oh, I have... I'm not going to say it because I don't, I only know it as Dean Court. So now I'm screwed. All right. Never mind.
All right. Well, let's freeze him out then for that. So Jared, these last clues are for you. Has the smallest capacity in the Premier League. Home to the Cherries.
That would be the Vitality Stadium.
That's yes, is absolutely correct. The Vitality Stadium. We'll get you those 2 points. It's crazy. I didn't even know this, but it is the smallest capacity in the Premier League state. I think it's only 11,000. I mean, that thing is small.
My favorite is when you look at the tunnel where the players come out, it looks like the awning is something that we would set up while tailgating for a Chiefs game. Like, it's just plastic. Like, it just folds out like a lawn chair. It's amazing.
It's very true. All right. Stadium number three has been rebuilt within the last 10 years. Has an approximate capacity of 62,000.
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce.
Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Damn, Jared, he took it from you. But yes, that is absolutely correct. And I'll get you those 2 points. Nice work on that. The other clues is based in London. Also hosts to international NFL games. And, of course, is the new home to Spurs. That is the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I can say I have been there. It is pretty, pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. I was trying to find the right word there, but cool came out. So let's go with it. I would highly recommend people go and check it out. All right, stadium number four was partly destroyed during World War II during a German raid. Has a capacity of approximately 75,000.
Jared.
Yes, Jared.
Old Trafford.
Nice grab, sir. Yeah, that is absolutely correct, and that'll get you those 2 points. Very cool.
Just trying to remember that damage stat. I remember that.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And I actually found some pictures too, which kind of makes you think, oh my gosh, this is nuts. And actually, I think I read a stat on this too, that they tried to play games around not the actual raid, but, you know, when things
but
were
like
going,
the sirens and stuff.
Right. They were just kind of like, yeah, we'll just keep going. And then when bits of the stadium were falling off, I think that's when they drew the line. But kind of crazy. Other clues on this one. One of the few Premier League stadiums to have a corner tunnel entrance. Recently named the North Stand after their legendary manager. And, of course, it is home to the Red Devils. That is Old Trafford. Very cool. All right, this is the last stadium of the game. Has been in existence since 1892. Has a capacity of approximately 40,000. It is based in Merseyside.
Boyce.
Jared.
Yes, Boyce.
Goodison Park.
That, sir, is absolutely correct. Yes, and it'll get you those 2 points based in Merseyside there. One of their stands is known as the Park Ends. That was another clue. And, of course, it is home to the Toffees. I am seeing pictures kind of floating around Everton's social media, wherever, that they're actually looking to get an upgrade now, I think. And the pictures do look pretty sweet. It's almost like, all right, well, this is what Tottenham's going to do. Here's what Everton's going to do. When that's going to happen, who knows? But it does look mighty impressive. But that'll certainly put that 1892 stadium to bed, which would be very sad. But anyway, guys, that does officially conclude the quiz. And it was a very close one, but here are the final scores. Boys, so you came away with 8. But Jared, sir, congratulations. You got 10 points and took the win. How do you feel, bud?
Oh, boy. Like I said, after the Spurs match, you know, heartened. I'm still losing. but you got to love, you got to root for the plucky kid, right? Come on. Got momentum now.
I'll take that. Commiserations, boys. Not quite getting the win today, but I want to say the future's bright for Arsenal. Question mark? Maybe. We'll see, right?
One can only hope.
Yeah. That's always the way, isn't it? Take it one game at a time at this point. Just...
At least your manager is very handsome. I mean, you got that going for you.
It's true, and he he has beautiful, wonderful Lego hair. I'm a big fan of it, and he's not Jose Mourinho, and we're not going to have to pay him £30 million to go away. All of those things are hilarious. Also, what's sad but also hilarious is that Harry Kane's out for the rest of the season, but Tottenham will still somehow be better in his absence.
I like how we're doing this thing where we're making ourselves feel better by picking on the other person's team and finding their weaknesses. It's got to that point. Neither team's making top four.
So this, when we go low, Arsenal go lower. That's an important thing to remember.
Gosh.
For like 3 seasons? I don't even know.
Recent memory. It's called a trend, and it's continuing.
Well, maybe I should wrap things up there. That does conclude. That does conclude today's episode. Thanks again, as always, to my guys, Jared Bassamente and Boyce Richardson. If you haven't done so already, please do subscribe to our weekly episodes. You can also follow us on our social media outlets, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the fun ones. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time.